and welcome back to the Player Analysis Show, brought to you by the United Mastercast. I'm your host, Hayder Rabbani, and I'm joined by Carson Pandey again for episode 2 of the series that we are running, and we're taking a deep dive into Mason Mount, Rasmus Højlund, and Dusan Vlahovic. And I think, you know, Højlund is an interesting one, isn't he, Carson? You know, as we're recording this right now, Manchester United very, very heavily linked today. It looks like United are looking at potentially 2 strikers, Harry Kane being one of them, and all of you are very familiar with what a fantastic player Harry Kane is. But the second option is Rasmus Højlund, a player that's done really, really well for Atalanta in Serie A this season, a player who's raw, but potentially, you know, at 40 million, that's been £40 million, I believe, that's been quoted in the press, could be some really, really good business, especially when United are looking to build with a number 9 rather than have, let's say, stop gaps like we had with Ibrahimovic, with Cavani, with Ronaldo, etc. So guys, make sure you hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. And Carlos, welcome back. So I do want to talk to you about Højlund because you are a very, very avid watcher and very knowledgeable on Serie A. And Man United have been linked with him. I mean, there is a player, for example, like Evan Ferguson in the Premier League. He's doing great things with Brighton, who looks like a player that United potentially should go for as well. But Højlund is one that's emerged, a left-footed player. So before we even go into strengths and weaknesses, and we have a few slides from FBref to break down some of those statistics, what do United need from a number 9? Because this season he played with Wout Weghorst, obviously came in, can't really hit a barn door, to be honest, in terms of scoring. But off the ball, his work has been fantastic. And Ten Hag's almost sacrificed goal scoring, hasn't he, at times, for someone like Weghorst to come in and be that trigger in the press. You know, we've seen him play at number 10 at times, you know, just so that United are good off the ball. And I think, you know, against Barcelona, while he might not be the best on the ball, I think he did a great job in terms of that aspect of the game, and that was his role. Then you look at Anthony Martial, as you mentioned in the last show that we did, he made of leaves. Well, he's made of glass, isn't he? Unfortunately, super talented, but you know, I've watched him the last 2-3 weeks. He's been back, and he looks like he doesn't want to run because, you know, he's scared that he'll injure himself. And a fantastic talent, but his time at United, I think, is up very, very soon. So when you're looking at these, they're two very, very different profiles. Cristiano Ronaldo obviously was surplus for requirements because of the off the ball work. So what is Ten Hag actually looking for from a number 9?
I think we sort of pointed that out in the previous show as well, where we spoke about how Ten Hag wants his front 4 or front 5 to occupy the final third constantly. And for starters, I think the next United number 9 should be adept at that. And I think Weghorst was pretty okay when it comes to doing that, because he was constantly around the centre-back, constantly occupying the final third. And he was pretty fairly decent with his link-up as well, apart from, I mean, how things have gone down the last few games. I think that's pretty much the very foundation of what Ten Hag wants in a centre-forward. He wants someone who can link up well with those around him, and someone who can, you know, occupy the final third. Because when it comes to someone like Ronaldo, I mean, apart from the fact that he wasn't a presser, there was another fundamental problem with him, and it was the fact that he was constantly dropping deeper when he shouldn't have, and that hampered the way United were playing, and he was constantly in the way of other players as well. So United centre-forward needs to be someone who drops deep only when there's need, but otherwise he needs to be occupying a centre-back, which is what Edinson Cavani sort of offered. But what United need is someone who can be more of a link-up forward than Cavani, because Cavani was more of that runner off the ball. And I think Højlund sort of fits their profile in a way. And I think a lot of players out there fit the profile as well. But when it comes to Højlund, I think the most fascinating part of him is that he's 21 and United haven't signed a young centre-forward since, I think, Anthony Martial. And we had a lot of hopes from Mason Greenwood. He's not there, and I don't think he should be around anymore. That's a different conversation. And I think it's when it comes to pure striking ability, Højlund is fairly close to what Greenwood was when it comes to the way he executes a shot, the way he picks those top corners, the way he pretty much hits the ball. And I think that's probably the most fascinating part of it. And if United end up signing someone like Rasmus Højlund, they are pretty much sorting out their number 9 position for the next few years, regardless of whether they sign someone else or not in the number 9 role, be it Harry Kane or, you know, anyone else, be it Randall Kolo Muani, or, I mean, even someone like Karim Benzema, who's obviously going to the Middle East now. But I think if you're getting someone like Højlund, you need to make sure that you don't have another center forward in the team who has a similar age profile. You need to have someone in who's older, which is what United are massive fans of because we've seen them go after Ibrahimovic, Ronaldo, Cavani. They've even tried for Mario Mandzukic a fair bit ago. So if you're signing someone like Højlund, you need to make sure that you're pinning your hopes on him, unless you're signing an older center forward. So I think that's something United need to constantly look at because I think as raw as he is, he's someone who can actually improve in the next 7 8 months and actually start regularly for United. And that's why I think if you're signing him, you need to pretty much give him the room to grow in instead of stifling his development and signing someone like Randall Kolo Muani or someone like a Victor Osimhen who's 24, but again, he's someone who's going to start every game, especially if you're signing him for what Napoli want him for, which is something like 160 million euros, which is an obscene amount of money. And I don't think Osimhen is going to join United, but you get my point. I mean, if you're signing Højlund, you need to play him. You need to make sure that he doesn't have someone of a similar age around him so that there's pressure on him and the other guy to, play a similar amount of game because one guy's pretty much going to feel frustrated and he's probably going to ask for a loan move pretty much in January or next summer.
You make a fantastic point, about. I still think United need two number nines. I think you'd agree. A combination of Harry Kane and Rasmus Højlund would be a really good combination because Harry Kane's obviously he's older, more experienced. But, while he's had a sensational season, hasn't he? And that's to score 30 goals in the league in that Tottenham side is just it's mind blowing. And you think about how many chances United create and consistently, especially in the last, I would say since the Carabao Cup. Where United's performances obviously did dip quite rapidly, and then near the end they managed to put some professional performances. And I think Ten Hag realized that the squad is thin and the players are knackered, and United played more of a mid block and they were less aggressive, but they were much more controlled and they got top four and they got third place and fantastic. But when you have a look at, for example, Harry Kane, he's a player who I'd want to see managed the way that Pep's managed Haaland. And we know that Haaland, before he joined Man City, you were thinking, he was picking up injuries quite frequently at Dortmund. But the fact that they had someone like Julian Alvarez is amazing quality. That's a player that I really wanted at Manchester United, to be honest. I'm sure a lot of people did. World Cup winning number nine. So when you're looking at Højlund and Kane combination, while I don't think they're similar, in my opinion, from what I've seen, but it's a small sample size with Højlund, and we'll go through that today. But I think that's a really nice combination. And you have then a player which, like Højlund, will get games, but then you're not putting pressure on him to be the starting number nine. Like you mentioned, he's 21 years old. I actually didn't realize he was that young. I thought, he might be 23. So when you're looking at what he's doing at Napoli and the qualities he's got, it's really fantastic. So I do want to move on, Carl. So I'll bring up the graphic here on the screen from FB Ref. I do want to bring up his, very high level looking at some of his statistics. So I think the ones that particularly stand out to me is progressive passes received and 99th percentile. I mean that's fantastic. Successful take-ons as well, 85th percentile, and touches in the attacking box at 90th percentile. So you mentioned that when I asked you what do United need from a number nine, and you said to stay forward really, and stay in those attacking areas, and to, I believe you said to stay central. So when you're having a look at those statistics, does that show what United are looking for from a number nine? They're looking for some discipline, but they're also looking for someone to almost be a huge threat in the box because the amount of chances United have missed, whether it's Weghorst, even Martial, is just like you think about the Chelsea game. Martial should have had a couple of goals in that first half. I know United went 2-0 up, but United will dominate possession. They will either score and then they won't kill the game off, and then the team will come back. Or it's a case of United huffing and puffing and puffing. You think about the game against Wolves where Garnacho came on and scored that fantastic goal, and United should have killed that game off. They scored early and should have killed it off probably, in the first half, the first 30 minutes. So when you're looking at something that Højlund could give United, it seems like he's a real jack in the box when he's in the penalty area.
Yeah, and I think we also need to consider the fact that Ten Hag has shown that he's someone who can be really flexible and versatile with the sort of centre forwards that he has because he played with a false nine with Dusan Tadic at Ajax. And then a season later, he had Sebastian Haller operating as that, centre forward who can you can actually play as a ball striker. Who's I'm not I don't think a player like Sebastian Haller is the ideal profile that Ten Hag wants, but he's shown that he can operate using his system with a fairly different amount of centre forwards as well. But I think Højlund's someone who is a great receiver in the final third. I mean, not just because of the fact that he's got that progressive passes stat, but he's someone who is extremely quick more than anything. I mean, when it comes to his strengths, apart from the fact that he's a great ball striker and he's got a great shot in him and shot powers, actually, I did compare it to Mason Greenwood and when he was playing. I think he's great at linking up with those around him, which is something that Ten Hag definitely wants in that side. And at Atlanta, Højlund's been operating fairly well. I mean, not fairly well, I mean extremely well with Ademola Lookman. And Atalanta are a side who dominate possession, who pin the opposition back, commit their front three. And it's almost as if they press so high up the pitch. I mean, obviously they've adapted over time, but the very foundation of the system is that they press fairly high up the pitch to win the ball back quickly and then supply the forward players in. And in a system like that, where you have a fair amount of control behind those players, the centre forwards can actually afford to be constantly in the final third. Or if not that, if there's not enough control out there, the centre forward's movement is such that he drags the opposition back line back with him, which is something that Rosimhen is pretty much excellent at doing. And I think Højlund's someone who's actually really good at that, because he's constantly shown that he's combined really well with whatever's around him. He gets these passes at his feet, and he lays others off and makes that darting run in behind, which he's really good at, and that's his main strength in terms of his basic actions, in terms of how he usually likes to go about business on the pitch. And United need that, because you have these players in the mold of Bruno himself, you know, Rashford and Sancho, who are not just quick when it comes to carrying the ball, they're extremely good at playing these quick passes around with the players around them, especially Bruno Fernandes, because we constantly see him doing that with whoever's around him, regardless of who's playing with him. And Højlund and Bruno Fernandes can actually combine really well. And same goes for Rashford, because when he's been playing with Ademola Lookman, Lookman's actions are fairly similar to what Rashford tries to do on the pitch. Although they come in a slightly different space, because United generally operate on the transition and Lookman plays in a team which already dominates possession and they have a fairly high technical ceiling. So a lot of things that Højlund does, they automatically come in the final third. And I think that's pretty much why that stat is. He's in 99 percentile for, you know, the progressive passes received. But I think there's a weakness of his that I've always found fairly peculiar, but I don't think there's he's felt the need to work on that at Atalanta. And that's the fact that he's not your typical physical specimen, because there have been games where he's been marked out, specifically in a game against Milan earlier this season. He was playing up against Malik Thiaw, and he was constantly out of the game for the whole of 90 minutes. And he's had those games where he's shown that he's still inconsistent to an extent, but there have been moments in games where he comes alive. I mean, I can't recall which game this was, but he created this goal from out of nowhere for Atlanta, where he went past a player on the right, turned the second defender around, and played a perfect pass inside for, I think it was Pasalic who scored the goal. And that shows that he's not just your goal scorer, he's someone who's a really technically proficient footballer. But when it comes to, you know, handling those 1v1 centre forwards who are on to him, pretty much like what Antonio Rudiger did to Erling Haaland in that first leg Champions League semi-final. Although that doesn't happen quite often, but he has these phases where he seems out of the game, despite the fact that he's a fairly decent presser as well. But we've pointed out that he's fairly raw. He's, what, 20, 21. And Erik ten Hag's great at working with these raw younger talents. He's shown that at Ajax. He's shown that at United as well. So I think that's something that he would definitely want to improve on. But off the ball, he's excellent. when it comes to getting onto those final balls from out wide and make getting those final touches to convert those chances. He's excellent at that, and I think that's what United need, because Bruno's created about 277 chances across all competitions, which is, I think, the highest in Europe, higher than the likes of Dybala, Messi, and all your creative forces across Europe.
Right there as well. Yeah,
And
I mean, the expected assists, because he only got 8 assists in the Premier League, but his expected assists was double at 16. So you'd like to think, well, I mean, I want to actually, apologies for interrupting, but I actually want to dig into more some of the weaknesses, because I think his weaknesses come from the fact he's young and raw still, rather than those aren't areas he can improve. But you mentioned, in terms of him being raw, but I mean, when I have watched him, I think he's a fantastic talent. I'd be very happy to see him at the club. But I do think sometimes his first touch can let him down a little bit. I don't know if you do agree with that. Maybe you don't. Maybe it's just something that I've noticed when I've seen him play. I am looking at the statistics here as well. You mentioned he's off the ball in terms of his movement. It's fantastic. But when you look at him defensively here, I mean, this can also do with the fact that maybe how Atalanta are set up. I haven't watched much of as much of Atalanta these days. So maybe you can give some more insight. Obviously, you've watched them more frequently than me. When you have a look here, like the tackles, he's in the bottom third percentile, interceptions against seventh percentile, and you're looking at the blocks as well, 21st percentile. And then you mentioned aerially, that's for a big lad, that's something that's a bit of a concern. And then when you think about if he struggles physically in Serie A, would he struggle physically as well holding up the ball in the Premier League? There are some, you play against the likes of Virgil van Dijk. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's some fantastic players in Serie A as well. But when you look at some of these weaknesses, is that a bit of a concern as well if United don't bring in, let's say, a Harry Kane with him, because their weaknesses that obviously he'll have to learn and to play through and he'll get better, but some of them are like the off the ball one is a little bit, in terms of his off the ball work, to me those statistics stand out a little bit to think, is he a pressing number nine, which is what United need and Ten Hag needs, because what United need really is the best qualities of Anthony Martial in terms of his ball playing ability and his close control and things like that. Coupled with Weghorst's off the ball work, because that's what Weghorst is fantastic at.
Yeah, I think when it comes to those defensive stats, I think the aerials one statistic is probably the only one that concerns me, because we're talking about a fairly small sample size when it comes to him being at Atlanta. And Atlanta are not hate to play those long balls. They're not a team that plays those crosses in unless they're 1-0 down and they've got 6 or 7 minutes to go. I mean, they've been doing that for the last two games because they've been losing those games, and Højlund, I think, was there, but there were other issues there. But Atlanta, 90% of times they don't play those crosses in. They're more of those ball to feet players there who, with the wide players often operating in the half spaces and on both the sides, and the centre forward occupying the central centre back of the opposition team. And in a system like that, you don't really expect aerial ability to thrive or come to the fore. But I think even in terms of his general attributes, he's not an aerial threat. I've not seen him score as many aerial goals as I would want him to. But again, it's a very small sample size, because when he was back at Sturm Graz, and there was a lot of talk about Atalanta going into signing, even there he wasn't someone who was that aerial threat. He was constantly a ball to feet footballer. I mean, in terms of when it comes to his finishing, that he was not someone who could go to the back post and ask for those long balls from the right back, saying that I can get to that and pass it in for the other player to come in and score from the front post. He's not someone who does that. But as I just said, it's a fairly small sample size, because he's been at Atalanta only this season, and he's not always played there. He's not played every game. They've had fitness issues with Duan Zapata, constantly being in and out. Luis Muriel has been pretty much phased out, and he's probably going to leave this summer. So that's why I think I would have loved to see Højlund stay at Atlanta for another season and play regularly, because there's a slot free there. But when it comes to a United perspective, they're getting a centre forward who's got a massively high ceiling. And if, say, Højlund goes on to score 25 goals in season next season for Atlanta, which he can, which he's got a genuine chance of doing, his price tag is going to escalate to 100 million. And that's going to be a problem because Atlanta are a selling club. And more than that, they've got someone in who has constantly dealt with United from his time at Leicester City when it comes to selling Harry Maguire specifically. And he knows that United can overspend on players. And that's not going to help United. And I think someone reported that Hoyland's already told Atlanta that he wants to leave. And if it's
today,
that, if that's true, and he's a United fan, by the way, he's given an interview a couple of years ago saying that he idolized Cristiano Ronaldo and he's someone who supports United. And so if that's true, I think United have a fairly decent chance of signing him. But it's all about what United do in the market after that. And not just speaking of Haaland specifically and only him in terms of how he fits into that. It's about 3 months to go for the transfer window to end, and there's a lot of things that can go on. United can still end up getting someone like Marcus Thuram in, who's, I think, a free agent in the summer. But I think there's a fair amount of work to do in the market to make sure that Haaland plays at his best. I mean, I think every footballer has his weaknesses. You talk about the best footballers out there. And it's all about how the manager comes up with a system to tide over those weaknesses. And we've said that Erik ten Hag's excellent at doing just that. And for someone who's 20 or 21, I think considering that United only signed Højlund as that younger centre-forward, I won't have too many concerns that he can be worth 100 million soon. Even if he doesn't join United, by the way.
Yeah, no, and my final thing I'm going to say, and I'm going to give you, it's difficult to say, but I'm going to ask you a yes or no question to wrap up the show. But what I would say is, you know, when you're looking at it, like let's say 40 to 50 million, you're not talking about 100 million outlay and asking to be your first choice number nine straight off the bat. It might be the case, you never know, if United, you know, can't get Harry Kane, and from what the reports are saying, looks more likely Harry Kane won't leave than will leave, which I think is a bit crazy. I think, you know, he can go and break the goal record, the Premier League goal record at Manchester United, and have the chance to win. He's got more chance to win the Premier League there than he does at Spurs or trophies or whatever. So, but what I would say is that when you're looking at, you're completely right. If Højlund goes and has another great season, he's a 100 million pound player or 100 million euro player. And, you know, United have consistently not bought those players where they should have bought them and then bought them later for too much, or they missed out. Caicedo is a perfect example. You know, I did a show years ago with Simon Edwards. You remember when I did this, as you know, 5 million at the time, sign him. Maybe he wouldn't be the player he was today. He's had a great foundation and tactical, let's say, learning from the likes of De Zerbi and Potter. But look at him now. He's an 80 million. He's an 80 million pound player, and he's actually the midfielder. I know we spoke about Mount last one, who I'd actually be going for. Caicedo can cover number six, can cover number eight, and I think he's going to be world class. But he might end up at Arsenal or Chelsea or somewhere like that. But yeah, my final question for you, Carlos, on Rasmus Højlund is: do you expect him to join Manchester United in the summer? Yes or no? Just a quick answer.
I would go with yes. When it comes to Atlanta's side specifically, I'm not sure about United's side, because I think it was the Athletic reported that he might not be the, you know, the preferred option. They're exploring, you know, a lot of strikers as well. So specifically speaking from the Atlanta side, if United offer Atlanta, say, something around 55 million euros, I think Atlanta will be happy to sell him, because he arrived for about in the region of 20 million or something. And Atlanta are a club who operate purely on the basis of profit. And whoever they sign after that, he's going to be a 50 million signing in a couple of seasons as well. So that's pretty much how Atlanta operate. But when it comes to United, they have a fair amount of options on their shortlist. So if United go for him or not, that's a completely different case. But if they go for him, I think Atlanta will be happy to sell him.
Fantastic, fantastic. Look, Carlos, thank you very much for joining me for episode 2 of this series of the player analysis shows. That's Rasmus Højlund done. Guys, make sure to hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, turn those notifications on, because episode 3 will be coming up very, very soon. And there'll be more shows like this. So make sure that you are subscribed. Thank you very much. We'll see you all next time.